You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.
Welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-hosts, Vanana.
Ni hao.
And Aaron Varola.
Oh, shit. What's up, y'all? That caught me off guard. What's up, y'all? Another episode.
Coming in with my second language. I just watched, I wasn't making fun of Chinese people, if that's what anyone is thinking or being sensitive about. I speak Chinese first language. I was just watching The Farewell with Awkwafina.
Oh, cool.
And like the whole movie's in Chinese. So it kind of made me want to speak Chinese. Because I miss my family.
Does Awkwafina speak fluent Chinese?
No, her Chinese is horrible in the movie. Oh. I'm sorry, Awkwafina. I'm so sorry, but
I'm sure she's listening.
Yeah. I know, right? If you're listening, but she really tried though. She really, really tried. But it's, you know, she probably didn't grow up speaking. I don't know if she did, but it doesn't really sound like it. But she did a really good job trying.
She sounds like she has like a shot glass in her throat. She's got a very awkward voice. She is really funny. And for those of you guys that don't know, we may not have talked about. Actually, I'm sure we didn't even mention this, but you know, I'm a big fan of The Dark Crystal, and she actually voiced one of the Skeksis, the one that dropped in on Netflix a couple months back. Anyways, welcome to episode 104. Keeping it light and fresh for all of you guys. Thanks again for tuning in to another weekly episode of the Fanboy Garage. Always happy to have you guys with us. There's a couple of things brewing. There was some news that broke, you know, before we do this recording. And I'm sure there will be news that will break after we do this recording. But before we get started, something we've been following has been the sort of game of chicken that Tenet and Mulan have been playing with coronavirus. And they have been on the losing battle of that. But it looks like Tenet's going to get moved again.
Yeah. Yeah, these are the movies that are never going to open. So this is something we talked about. We've talked about a number of times, but especially the last couple weeks. You know, the idea of chasing the opening, like trying to move your film to the date that you think is going to make it like the first thing that's going to be in theaters when theaters reopen. And this is what you get. Because now we don't know what's going on. And, yeah. You know, so you're at the point now where you really are going to have to consider either starting to move stuff to next year or moving it far enough in it, like what they did with Wonder Woman, where they moved it into October. Just moving it. Just don't forget about trying to get it to the, maybe push it back a couple weeks. No, just now you either need to start to say, you know, the hell with 2020, or we're going to just move this thing to November or whatever, just to hope that things are safe. Because, you know, August 12th, which was the date that it was supposed to be coming out, I mean, that's a month away, less than a month away now, and it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So
it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's you know, and we talked a little bit because, we all were in New York. But most of, you know, Chris and I are in New York and Vanana's in Texas. And, you know, we for the folks in New York, we talked a lot about, you know, phase four and that would be, you know, indoor dining, all that stuff. Was it phase four or phase
three? Well, that was phase three, but then they actually.
But then they postponed everything because of all the other stuff that's been happening.
Yes.
And so.
And there's actually no talk now. So phase four in New York City, which would include movie theaters, was scheduled to be this coming Monday, July 20th.
Yeah, that's not happening.
There's not even talk about it now.
No. I mean, indoor dining, which, you know, again, was part of phase three, has been put on hiatus.
Yes.
Like, the gyms, local gyms, are all suing the state of New York because there's absolutely been no conversation or talk around when they can get back to business. Yeah. So this is just, obviously, you guys aren't coming here to hear about that. Well, actually, some of you are coming to hear about gym talk. But, you know, these are all, in you know, key indicators of what we could expect, you know, related to the movie or the theater going experience. Because, again, you need to be in an indoor environment.
Yep.
And if they're not comfortable with letting people dine, they're certainly not going to let people.
Yeah.
A lot more people go to theaters.
And you're seeing a lot of other states now starting to cancel the indoor dining, cancel movie theaters, cancel. Yep. I mean, California. So the thing is, you know, from this perspective, and we're talking about movies coming out, we look at it a little differently than you're going to look at like the big picture of this, as far as like the impact of the pandemic and everything, because, you know, we're focused on for the purpose of this podcast, the movie aspect of it. And while when we're talking about the movies, there's a reason why we focus on New York and California. And it's because they're dictating what's going on, because they're your two biggest markets. And if you can't open these movies in New York and California, then you're not going to open them.
Yeah,
it's that simple, because there's too much money. I mean, right before we started recording, you had mentioned that you read that Tenet has to make like $800 million worldwide in order to break even. So you're not opening this movie right now. There's no way that movie's going to make that much money.
I don't understand why they can't wait to release it. You know what I mean? You're going to have a better chance of recouping that $800 million when you release it at a time when you know people are going to be like, you know, running back to the economy or whatever. Like, do you guys get where I'm coming from?
Yeah.
Why don't you wait until we're in a more certain time? Because even if New York opened theaters July 20th, there's still going to be a lot of people that are going to be skeptical. You know, a lot of people are not going to feel safe. A lot of people, for whatever reason, you know, and then that's your shot. That's it. That's it. That's your shot. You might as well wait and kind of like come back with a bang and open much later. I mean, I think they should push this, you know, to sometime like near the holidays, you know, after we get a vaccine.
I mean, that's
my guess.
I really think the motivation here was that I do believe that in the case of Tenet and Mulan, because they've been kind of moving together, right? Even though they're different studios. I think the motivation really was just they thought that they had a handle on this, and they said, we want to be the first two movies out of the gate, so that when these movie theaters reopen and people start to get back out there, we're going to be that destination. We're going to be that thing that they, just how people flooded bars and flooded restaurants and when they opened. Now let's forget about the result of that, but the reality is, people, when bars and restaurants and even hair salons and barbershops opened, people flocked to them. So the thought was, well, geez, we're going to be the first new wide release films, right, in major films in theaters when everything is open across the whole country. Because, again, by July 20th, everything was supposed to be open across the whole country. And they were just trying to figure. And then when things started to slip a little, then they moved to August 12th, figuring, all right, well, we'll be good. They're really just, they tried to play it too perfectly. And now I think I'm hoping that if they are going to move these movies, these films again, which I would assume at least Tenet will, right? I'm hoping that they, like you just said, I think they should move it far enough in the future.
Yeah,
just move it to November, move it to December, move it to 2021, wherever the hell you have to move it. Just move it, because now if production on certain films is going to start to slow up a little bit as things start to close again, you know, maybe they're going to need some more films for early in 2021.
Mm-hmm. You know, the interesting thing is that I remember when this whole thing was happening or starting to happen, I thought, wow, No Time to Die, the James Bond movie, getting bumped a whole year. I thought that, damn, that was aggressive.
That was crazy, yeah.
Fast and the Furious got bumped. damn, that's aggressive. Why are they doing all that? Like, yeah, moving it to the following year. That's craziness.
Yep.
And I'm like, genius. Sony, yeah, Universal, genius. Well,
you know, here's the irony of that, though. The irony of that is those moves were done so far in advance because it was the overseas markets that looked like there was no shot of being open.
Right?
China and Europe were completely locked down, and it didn't look like there was any end in sight for that. And those are two franchises that rely heavily on, yep, China and just overseas Europe, overseas markets in general, right? Bond and especially Fast and the Furious. They make a ton of their money overseas. So it made sense at the time. Now, it's ironic because here we are in July and Europe and China and these overseas markets are reopening and reopened. And here in the United States, we're the reason that you have to start worrying about release dates.
Yep.
So their intention at the time was smart. Like, hey, it doesn't look like overseas markets are going to be open anytime soon. Let's not release these films. And now it's just the overseas markets are open. It's here that's the problem. So either way, it worked out that they moved their films in advance. And you know what, people? It's almost going to... I think people pretty much have probably even forgotten. Like, you just mentioned it right now, I had forgotten about those films, which is okay, because when they start to promote them next year, it'll be fresh in my mind, and it won't feel like it's like, oh, those were those movies that were that have been sitting around for a year.
No, and I mean, they're done. They're in the can. Yep. You know, I think exactly. Had, you know, films like Black Widow, and even these two, had, if they had moved, you know, later out into 2021, we'd be looking at a pretty stacked year for 2021. You know, where instead of that seasonality that we can typically predict, you have an entire year of like people, because then people are going to really want to go to the theater, you know?
Yeah.
So,
well, you know what? Forget about a stacked year. I mean, we're going to have stacked months. It's going to be kind of like bottlenecked in August, I feel like, because there's other films coming out in August, you know?
I don't see that even. And like at this point, I'm scared for Wonder Woman 84.
It's going to be like a movie a week. A movie a day in August.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. I really don't think it's going to happen. I think when we get near August, when we get to the end of July, you know, it's going to be the same thing we've heard all freaking year. Just two more weeks, guys. Just two more weeks while they figure out how to control this, you know. Right. That's just how Yeah,
well,
I don't think anyone has figured it out
like
yet.
So enthusiasm.
Here's the thing that's going to happen, because let's just say, you know, New York, California, and New York, California are in very different positions right now. But even if California, for instance, got a handle on everything, it's still going to take probably about a month to maybe regain control. And then you're not just going to say, okay, let's reopen everything now. And no, they're going to learn, and they're going to say, they're going to be extra cautious, right? So it's probably going to take a little while before attractions, you know, things where you're going to have to get groups of people indoors, are going to be reopened. So I just don't see how August is realistic at this point. And I would not be surprised if both of those movies get moved way out of, or just out of the summer altogether. Maybe October, you know, maybe the holidays. I mean, it's not like there's going to be a lot of stuff coming out for this holiday season. I mean, you just you got to do what you got to do, but it doesn't make sense to keep moving. After a while, you can't just keep moving these dates. You have to lock something in at some point and try to be comfortable with it. And you know, if I'm a studio right now, and I don't disagree with you about Wonder Woman 84, I mean, as crazy as it might sound today on as we record this July 14th, I mean, to think, I mean, hey, you know what? What is it, October 2nd?
Wonder Woman 84? Yeah, it's like early in October.
Yeah, I mean, as crazy as it may sound to say, well, you know, that wouldn't be a little risky. I mean, at this point, is it really that crazy after all this time?
No, I mean, but here's the other thing to factor into that. So LA County is like, we're not sending kids back in the fall.
right,
for school.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's think about that for a second.
And that doesn't necessarily correlate, but
no, it doesn't. But it just it just shows you how cautious they're going
sure.
into
yeah.
the fall season. Yeah. Right?
Well, because here's the other thing. And again, not to get too deep into all this other stuff, but the other thing too is the fall is a wild card right now, because we don't know what's going to happen when you combine this pandemic with the flu season.
The flu season. Yep.
And what that's going to result in. And so that's why I say, like, while it may sound crazy to say, oh, October, you know, that's so far off. I mean, I think in March we said, oh, July, my God, that's so far off. Like this, we didn't think in March that in July we were going to be here. Mm-hmm. And now in July, I don't think it's unreasonable to say October. I don't know, because we just don't know how this is going to evolve. We don't know what's going to happen throughout the rest of the country. We don't know what's going to happen if and when schools reopen. We don't know what's going to happen when you combine the flu season with this pandemic that's not going to be gone, right? And at least not, you know, it's going to be here to an extent. That's where you start to say, man, that's why I'm saying, you know, if I'm any of these studios, I'm thinking, welcome 2021. I don't even want to be bothered and have to. I mean, I know, like, in Philadelphia today, they just announced that they're not going to be issuing any permits for like large gatherings. So like parades, anything that the city has to issue a permit for. So it's not private things like concerts and things like that, but for public events that require a city permit, parades, festivals, they're not issuing any until February of 2021 at the earliest.
Wow.
So, like, you know, you're starting to see some of that stuff now. And I think it's because a lot of these places are like, what can we live without? You know, what can we live with and what can we live without? And is this worth potentially risking, you know, any, I mean, or is it worth just saying, you know what, I think we can live without that parade. I think we can live without that festival.
Right.
You know, let's just wait till 2021. And, you know, by then we should be okay. If not, we have bigger problems than worrying about festivals and parades. But you know, that's probably going to be part of the thought process. It's like, is it worth it after a while? You know, and you're seeing it now with like these, you know, sports leagues that are getting ready to start up to some degree. Like, you know, a lot of athletes, they're testing positive. You know, they're under quarantine. You know, there's players opting, like big time players opting not to play. And it's like, you know, and at some point it's like, is it really worth it? Is it worth having games in front of no fans where you're going to have shortened seasons, or in some cases finishing seasons where you're potentially, you, who knows if you're even going to be able to finish said season if things start to get crazy, right? And you have like an outbreak that gets out there. It's just like, after a while you say, is it worth it? Is it worth, and it's a little different in sports because, I mean, they're losing money anyway. Whereas the studio doesn't necessarily, a movie studio doesn't lose money unless they just never get to release the film, right? Or have to release it in a manner that doesn't help them recoup their money.
I mean, Tenet.
Well, I mean, Tenet's a, listen, let's be honest. Listen, Tenet, I get Christopher Nolan and all that, and I understand it. But like, if you have to make $800 million just to break even, that's a risk anyway. Even in a normal time, right? I mean, there's no guarantees that that movie was going to make $800 million worldwide. So I don't care what the, even in a regular scenario. So that's a different type of risk. But you certainly would think you'd want to maximize your investment. So like, I can't see Tenet being a movie that they say, well, you know what, the hell with it, we're going to release it to video on demand. Not at that price tag.
Right.
But,
well, something like Black Widow, though, where
probably
the budget, I'd say the budget is probably at or around $250 million. Could be. I don't know. Making that up. I don't even know what the budget is. But I'd say.
Well, that's the Tenet budget, there. Right? The Tenet budget was they said 225, 250.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so Black Widow, I wouldn't imagine being, you know, I'd imagine it'd be in the same ballpark. It's
Black Widow, they're saying between 150 and 200.
Okay, so but still fairly significant. So you'd have to parse it down, what, $700 million then?
Look, we know that the formula that they use when they try to guess, they basically say how much was the production budget. Then they tend to double that for marketing, which isn't always accurate, but that's the general estimate. And then you cut the worldwide gross in half with theater splits and all of that stuff. And that's how they come to that number when they say this movie needs to make this much money or gross this much money to break even. Those are guesstimates. I mean, we'll never know what the true numbers are because Hollywood accounting, obviously. No films ever make money, right, on paper. So we don't really know if that formula is always accurate or if it's ever accurate, but that's what they guess. They always just say, you know, take the production budget, double it for marketing, and then cut the gross in half, and that's your break-even point. Maybe that's true, maybe that isn't. But if we're just going by that for the sake of the conversation, then, yeah, I mean, Black Widow's in the same position. Although it's different because with Disney, you know, it's part of a machine. And with the MCU, I mean, it's made like $3 gazillion. So, I mean, yeah, do they really care at this point?
Way in the black.
Yeah.
The studio itself is way in the black.
Yeah, they'll be okay if Black Widow doesn't make $800 million or $700 million.
Fascinating.
We're not going to the movies this year.
I was gonna say, I was like, you know what's tried and true though? You know what everyone else can expect week in and week out is another episode from us.
You know, Mulan's budget was
and more streaming.
Yeah. Mulan's budget was $200 million. Or is $200 million.
Wow.
So Disney has two films that are probably anywhere between $350 and $400 million worth of budget that they have to release in the next by this year, or they're trying to release this year.
Yeah, Mulan shot in some really remote, you know, wide, beautiful spaces, which I'm sure cost a lot of money to, like, all the logistics to, like, get to, all the fight scenes, the battle scenes, the background, you know, the costumes. I'm sure
it has to be super frustrating for Disney because they had, I mean, that movie was in March, supposed to be released, I think, the 25th or so of March. Mm-hmm. And they had early releases, so they were probably projecting its success. And then, oh, boop, this thing happens, and bye-bye, you know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Now they may be looking at the VOD market to at least get it out there and recoup some sort of money, but who knows? Who knows what sort of strategies they're going to put into place to kind of see some green.
Yeah.
I know.
And they have resources.
The New Mutants is going to be scheduled to release in August this year too, but why is that funny?
No, because we've talked about it and it's like, why would you release that at this point? Throw it on to Hulu, throw it on to Disney Plus. All of the Fox films are starting to make their way onto Disney Plus. Like, I just got really excited because Days of Future Past popped up on there.
Yep.
So that's exciting to see that they're starting to fold all of that, of those movies. I mean, that's the first Fox film I'd say I was excited to see.
It's absolutely ridiculous that they're still trying to release New Mutants in the theaters.
Seriously.
The fact that they missed the boat, I thought that movie was absolutely perfect to release during the complete lockdown time when people were looking for things to watch on demand.
Yes.
They should have released that for like $10, right to video on demand. I think it would have done pretty well, and they completely missed their window on that for a movie that wasn't going to be successful in theaters in a normal time. If it had come out 10 years ago when it was supposed to come out, it still wasn't going to do well in theaters. Like, it's just nothing about this movie screams anybody wants to see it, and yet for some reason they're just holding out on this thing. Like, and it's not even theirs, like they inherited it.
I know.
Which is even weirder.
The young actors don't even look like that anymore.
Like Maisie Williams is like 30 now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Maisie Williams doesn't even remember she made it.
So funny.
At this point, they're probably so like, man, could you just do something with it so we can get like 30 cent residual checks for it or something? Because it's like, it's absolutely crazy that that is the film that they're holding out on. Like, it's the perfect movie for video on demand. It's the perfect, it would have been the perfect movie for the time, or even just on Disney Plus at this point, because I don't even think anybody would pay for it now at this point. But yeah, I don't get it. Is there like something in their contract or something that says this movie has to be released in theaters for like a week or something? Because I'm surprised. I don't know. Like it's bizarre.
There's actually a new set of SAG-AFTRA contracts that we all have to vote on by next week, I believe, by July 22nd. And it kind of changes the structure of residuals, especially taking into account all of like the streaming platforms, you know, that are abundant now. I have to read through the document. I don't know how it's going to pan out, but you know, SAG is saying that it is going to raise the percentage of residuals that actors do get. And then some things on it didn't change, like stunt coordinators and like the stunt teams aren't really seeing a benefit from it. But they have it laid out in tiers for the video on demand stuff, with Amazon being like the top tier. So like if you're in an Amazon show, it's like very different what you get. And they even touch briefly on HBO Max. I'll read it and I'll let you guys know kind of what the new contracts say if they pass.
Does it include do the new rules count for a movie that's been delayed for like 33 years?
It doesn't say that,
Okay.
I'm sure in someone's contract, you know, it had some theatrical release clause.
Yes.
And I'm sure it's in there somewhere, and that's where they want to recoup back their money. I mean, everyone's trying to recoup back their money, right? But yeah, I totally agree with you guys. This film needs to be video on demand. Let's just be done with it.
Unless they got a gem on their hands that apparently nobody knows about.
Are the chances? Is the budget?
Yeah.
The budget for that movie really $200 million?
Mutants? Seriously, for New Mutants? I thought it was made on the super cheap, but there were the reshoots, so maybe that's what.
Because I just did a quick search, and that seems high. I can't imagine that.
Super high.
Yeah. But maybe. I was just curious to see. Maybe that's why they're holding out. I have no idea.
Right.
Anyways.
Yeah.
All right. Well, moving on. Chris, some exciting news about your favorite superhero.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, HBO Max has been a lot of talk about some type of Batman series popping up on HBO Max. There were obviously the wild rumors of like, you know, oh, well, Ben Affleck's Batman's going to be in a show and all this. And it turns out that, at least for now, they just announced that there's going to be a Gotham Central-esque show that is going to be set in the Matt Reeves Batman universe that's going to be established in The Batman with Robert Pattinson. And it's going to revolve around, you know, Gotham police, right, and detectives and stuff like that. So it's hopefully going to be the show that I thought Gotham was going to be.
I was going to say, didn't they already make this show?
No, they didn't. They originally sold the concept of that show and then decided to make it an origin story for every Batman villain ever, and including Batman then even got a little origin in it as well. But, you know, Gotham, the original concept of it was that it was just going to be a detective show set in Gotham City, like in the Batman universe.
I remember.
And then that just, it just became not that.
No, it didn't.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that, I'm hoping that that's this show. And I would imagine it will, right? Because I can't see, I think this is it's a whole different deal. I think this one will stick to that. Mm-hmm. And it's great because if, you know, what we've read and heard about the world that Matt Reeves is looking to play in and create, it does lend itself to a lot of, you know, cool villains and stories and characters and stuff, and exploring Gotham, you know, which Gotham in the best Batman stories, Gotham is a character. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you can just explore that world and let that amazing rogues gallery, I mean, even, you know, you can dig deep. I mean, you don't even need to get into like the, you, there are so many great Batman villains, ones that people have never even really seen in on TV or in movies. You can, and not the, you know, the over the top ones that we were talking about a few episodes ago, like Killer Croc and stuff like that. But like, you know, really cool. I think there's a lot that they could do here with this. And being on HBO Max, I think they will resist the temptation of turning it into, I mean, they're not going to need it to be a Batman origin story, right? Because it's, there is going to be a Batman in this universe. So how they get around the idea of, you know, well, why is, yeah, like, where the hell is Batman? But you know what? That's okay. I mean, look, there's, they've done it in the comics. They've, we've seen it done well, so I don't see any reason why they can't do it and do it well. So I'm pretty excited about this. Anything, look, more Batman or Batman universe stuff, the merrier for me. I mean, I'm never going to complain about that unless, of course, it sucks. Then I will happily complain about it. But yeah, all thumbs up on the idea and the concept.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's totally doable. You know, and even if, like, they're just referencing, obviously they will be referencing him. They have to be referencing him, but you know, there's more than three police officers and in a precinct, right? So, you know, it'd be interesting to hear from other officers that you see pop up in, say, the Batman, telling their fellow officers, dude, you're never going to believe what I just saw, blah, blah, blah. And they kind of, do that, you know, they kind of do their investigative stuff or their, being corrupt and whatever have you, and that sets up maybe the next film in Matt Reeves' trilogy. So
I'm so excited for this, you know, because it's going to be written by Terrence Winter, who wrote Boardwalk Empire.
Yep.
I think shows like Gotham, shows like, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., like all of these like CW or these like network TV superhero shows, there is a certain formula to it, you know, and Gotham really had the formula of more so of like a Law and Order or like a FBI or one of those shows that have 24 episodes, you know, every episode is different. It's formulaic. There is a certain way you attack the characters and really there isn't any creative license to kind of craft and hone your own environment and show, you know, because of how much content they have to deliver and how much they have to shoot in a day. Something like this is really exciting because you have a writer like Winter who is, I think, going to paint a really deep world and something that DC does really, really, really well and is their advantage over Marvel and anyone else is that the dark worlds and the dark heroes that they have in their pocket, right? And I think that's going to be really exciting to see, and that's something we haven't seen before, and it's not going to rely on any type of formula that needs to be on network TV. It's going to be on its own. And we're going to explore a lot of really cool gems and a lot of cool characters. And they just have, I think, a lot more creative license. So I am super excited about this. I think really it's about time. It really is about time. And I think DC is making such a mint, like, stance at where they are now. They're standing in a really good position compared to last year, you know?
Yeah.
It's all great news, yeah.
And I think the whole idea of the corruption in, I mean, look, we've seen the corruption within the Gotham City Police Department and stuff like that has played a role in a lot of Batman stories. You know, it played a role certainly in the, well, actually we've seen touches of it even in Batman 89, right? You saw it in Batman Begins and that Nolan universe. And you know, we've seen it in, we've seen it before. It was even touched on in Gotham. I mean, it was a plot point in Gotham, especially in the beginning. It's always been one of the more fascinating elements of the Batman universe to me was that whole corrupt police force. Because at the end of the day, like, we got to remember, I mean, there was a reason why Batman became Batman. right? Why Bruce Wayne became Batman. Right. It was to save right. his city, right? Save the soul of that city because of the corruption. The supervillains technically came later. Right, a lot in right. a lot of cases, the villains were a product of the fact that, well, the police were corrupt. There was a lot of crime in Gotham. Now we have this Batman
vigilante.
So
yeah.
now we need to up the ante as villains. It basically yeah. was the way
that you know that quote or what you're explaining is like a beautiful quote in Batman Begins. He talks about escalation.
Yeah.
Jim Gordon does.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, we wear Kevlar. The guys, you know, bad guys get armor-piercing right. bullets. And you're wearing a mask.
Yes.
And so he, like, foreshadows the rise of the supervillain. And, you know, that kicks off the Joker.
Yeah.
Which is, man. And you know what? That is the brilliance of Chris Nolan and kind of setting that stage and having those conversations and that those lines of dialogue. It's brilliant.
Yeah. And that's a theme, right? Of the Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's also, I was just going to say, it's also kind of fitting to, you know, our time and what we're experiencing now, right? With like the, you know, BLM movement and et cetera. Even shows like Brooklyn Nine-Nine are kind of thinking about how they portray cops and things like that on TV. So it's going to be really interesting because it's a sensitive topic, no matter where you stand, right? Whatever side you're on. It's yeah. if you're going to portray a police department on screen, on film, with everything that everyone has just gone through in these, you know, last couple of months. Although by the time the show is out, you know, maybe it's not going to be as fresh, but it's kind of very fitting to talk about corruption in a police department that we are going to understand in a different way now after going through everything that we've gone through in current events than ever before. So that's really interesting, and how they tackle that is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, there was certainly some visceral reactions, you know, on social media in response to this announcement.
Were there?
Yeah, shockingly. Specifically around that. Like, oh, we really want to do a show around police officers in this day and age? And I saw a bunch of comments kind of flying around like that. Sure.
I mean, so the answer is yes. yeah. And the answer is yeah, because they're great stories. And just because something may strike a chord with things that are going on in our current times doesn't mean that it's not worthy of art, right? I mean, that's what art should do, right? In a lot of ways, represent mm-hmm. the times, represent art. So I don't know why that would be weird. But the other thing is, too, the corruption.
Cancel culture. That's
well,
why.
That, obviously. But besides that, the corruption in this, at least if they follow the traditional story, right? I mean, a lot of the corruption in Gotham came from the fact that, like, you know, the police were basically on the payroll of, like, the, you know, mob. The mob and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's going to be different enough, I would think, than what's going on or what's perceived to be going on, you know, now that I don't think it's as easy as just saying like, oh, really, we're going to do a corrupt police officer show. Well, I mean, it's still a show set in Gotham City about the corruption in Gotham City, which, again, has been well documented. Anyone who is a Batman fan or knows these stories knows where that comes from.
Right.
And knows what the deal of that is. And you know, even if it does, which would be nice, reflect stuff going on, you know, in today's world. Like, again, I don't know why that's an issue.
Yeah,
that,
I mean,
that's
at the end of the day.
I mean, Watchmen. Look at what Watchmen was.
Oh, Watchmen was brilliant. Watchmen was so. Oh man, and you know, you think about it, it was right on time, kind of.
Yeah.
You know, but the funny thing is, you can remove, like, look, I understand in today's environment right now, we're hyper focused and hypersensitive on the idea of police, right? Police itself, but. It's not just about what that represented, right? And that's just power. And so, you know, power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And you know, so I mean, that's the thread, that's the nucleus of this idea. It doesn't, you know, it could be It could be Gotham PD. It could be a, you know, a government body. It
right.
Be, you know, all of those things have been explored in art before. So,
sure. But let's also not lose sight of the fact that there will be good guys in this show.
Of course.
And that's the whole point. I mean, that was the, I mean, that's what Jim Gordon, right?
Yeah.
The birth of Jim Gordon as a character is because he was like the one good cop, right?
Right.
And so, I mean, it's not, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
It's like, yes. It's like, it's the oldest blueprint of storytelling.
Yes, absolutely.
Good versus evil.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Remember that?
And just because you don't want evil or bad, you can't just say, I don't want to see any of that at all. You know, you haven't even given the storytelling a chance. And that's what's so dangerous about, you know, this whole cancel culture thing, right? Is because, like, no one's really listening. And you know, I was listening to a really good podcast the other day, and I try not to get political. I try not to get into it. Yeah, it was this one. I was listening to myself last week when I was talking about social media. But I was listening to a separate podcast, and, you know, one of the guests who's – I think he's a doctor, or, you know, he's definitely smarter than me. He was saying how social media is – basically just all processed information. Like, by the time you get to your status or, you know, what you want to tweet, it's information that you've already processed. So it's not information that other people can see what has led up to it or the conversations that have led up to it. And sometimes that's what causes, you know, like negative feedback, right? Right. It's just because you're just regurgitating and saying what you've already processed. It's the final product. It's not open discourse to anything. And
it lacks context.
It lacks context. So I don't see anything wrong with it, but I know people that do have the power and these keys, you know, content creators, you have a lot of power in like what kind of stories you want to tell. If you're in that type of position, they're going to have to think about how they want to tell these stories. They have to. It's just,
yeah,
they can't escape it, you know. But if you don't want to watch it, that's fine. But you might be missing out on something that's really beautiful and really well written, and a story that's really well told, especially when you do have a veteran writer and you know someone like Terrence Winter, you know, with Boardwalk Empire, is going to craft a very beautiful story, you
right.
know, that's going to be very nuanced. It's not just going to be black and white. So,
and that's kind of my views. Let's also talk, I mean, let's not lose sight too of the fact of concepts of fiction or even movies and television and why we watch them and things like that. I mean, there are bad things in the world. But does that mean, I mean, look, war, right, is bad. But does that mean we shouldn't have war movies? You know, I mean, diseases are bad. I mean, like HIV and AIDS, right? Nobody's happy about that. But a movie like Philadelphia, should that not have happened? Should nobody have watched it? I mean, you know, it's crazy. One of my favorite, sometimes fiction too, you can use it as a way to get at something. So that's why I mentioned Watchmen before. Like Watchmen was so brilliant, and talking about the HBO series, was so brilliant in how it used fiction and it used this outrageous story to touch on subjects that were so relevant to the time. One of my favorite television shows of all time is Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And one of the reasons that I love that show is because it used fiction in a way to tell stories about religion and race relations and discrimination and war in a way that was not so on the nose that it would be off-putting, but in a way where it was, you could address the issues, and if somebody really wanted to read between the lines and dig into it, you could, but it was still palatable because it was fiction at the end of the day. And that's what is great about some of the best science fiction out there, is that you can use the fiction as a tool to get at things that may be off-putting if you literally do it on the nose. I don't know why we feel that we can't just have shows or movies or anything about things that are, you know, pressing about today's society. That's what fiction and that's what movies and TV and shows and all that stuff should not necessarily always, but they're going to be a reflection of that. Art is going to be a reflection of that.
I don't think those people know either.
Yeah.
You know, we want heroes, you know, like
sure.
in the thick of the shut down in New York when I was at home, I watched, you know, a bunch of Marvel movies again because I just wanted to see the good guys like yeah. kick ass. That like literally that's all I wanted. And then I watched Infinity War and that final battle scene where all the heroes showed up was so emotional.
Yeah.
You know, I was like sobbing in my apartment. And someone can say like, oh, it's fiction. It's a movie. It's fake. It's nothing. It's just like superhero characters. It's cartoons, right? If they can say that. But it touches you in a place where that's the oldest story of all. It's good versus evil, you know?
It's kind of funny you mentioned that because one of the things I was talking about to my wife and my brother was that in these dark times that we're living in, I've been drawn to stories about people who, you know, real life people and, you know, the movies made or documentaries made about these folks. And so the first one that I, you know, I just happened to watch a couple of years ago, which I sobbed my eyes out on a plane while I was watching it, was the Fred Rogers, the Mr. Rogers documentary. I watched it a while back ago, and then I watched Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood with Tom Hanks. And first 5 minutes into the film, I'm bawling my eyes out. And my wife is like, what is it? Like, dude, we're 5 minutes into the movie. What happened to you? And yeah. And I said to her, you know, I remember, you know, having this great relationship with Mr. Rogers when I was a kid. And wow. You didn't realize it then, but you realize it now that forces of positivity really mean a lot. They shine a very bright light in dark places. And we don't really have that anymore. Those things really don't exist anymore. Right. And so lately I've been kind of drawn to those figures, and I happened to stumble onto another documentary on Netflix, which was called Mucho, Mucho Amor. And that was about Walter Mercado, who was a TV personality on, you know, Spanish TV networks. And he was always about positivity. Like, you know, he was reading the Zodiac sign, all of this stuff. Like, he's just mystic guy. And it's quite a fascinating documentary, but again, it's someone who was putting positivity out in the world, had some serious stuff happen to him, you know, like his manager basically took everything away from him, you know, swindled him out of his own name. And the guy spent years trying to reclaim that. But again, I think the memories flood back of here was somebody, you know, putting positive out in the world, and we don't have that anymore. Yep. We don't have these people, these galvanizing characters who are trying to rally humanity in the best way possible. Everything right now is doom and gloom. And I think this is probably why most of us are starting to stray away from social media, because there's a lot of negativity out on there.
Yes.
And we're looking for ways to connect to each other. And
yep.
The best ways are through those, you know, those positive escape moments, right?
Yeah.
I think things like Hamilton are a great example, because it's like, it's light, it's a lot of, you know, people having a lot of fun with it, it's striking conversation.
But before we get into that, because I know that you're gonna
even meaning to transition there, but
oh really, okay.
no but go ahead.
No, because I would say before, I thought you might have been heading down that road, so I just wanted to say, because I think the one thing too we have to realize is that we have to be very careful when it, especially in a time like this where cancel culture has become such a big thing, we have to be very careful about sanitizing our art. And, you know, not everybody looks at art the same way. Not everybody enjoys films or music or television the same way for the same reasons, right? Like, for instance, I'm somebody that, and No offense to anybody who's in this position, but I'm somebody that has never fully understood why people intentionally love watching things that are going to make them cry. Not that I haven't cried in movies before. I certainly have. But, like, I tend to want to feel better about myself after I leave a film than I did when I went in, or a TV show, whatever. That's just me. That's why I consume, watch television, why I watch art. Again, that's not always, but there's a general rule. Music, it's one of my biggest passions in life. And the music that I listened to for most of my life was always, like, controversial. And when I was a kid, people were trying to ban it, right, and everything. And but for me, I gained a lot of positivity out of it, and I saw positivity in it. Some people just want music to be something in the background or something that they could dance to. For me, it was deeper than that. That's my experience. Somebody else's experience is different. There are some people that just want to watch a movie or watch a TV show just to escape and take them away or have something in the background or light. And there are some people that like to dig deep and they like things that are heavy and they're going to move them in some way, shape, or form. So if we sanitize the art, it takes the edge off of it. And we have no chance of getting anything that truly has a message. We have very little chance of getting things that are powerful, that can speak to anything. And that's not to say that we should be no holds barred, right? And things that are truly offensive should be okay. But I think we're at the point where maybe are starting to lose a little bit of sight of that. And I'm always afraid of, like I said, trying to sanitize our art so that it's just because you watch something for some reason or you listen to something for some reason doesn't mean that other people are watching things or listening to things for the same reasons and the same reactions. And that's how that speaks to our individuality, right? Yeah. And that's what develops a big piece of that. And that speaks to who we are as people and what we are as a society. And I think without different messages, right, that's how we lose sight of messages in general.
Right.
And that's how we lose sight of the things that really move the needle. So I would hope that people understand that. And that even though you don't understand something or agree with something or get to it, that we, again, I'm not talking about offensive things, truly, you know, things that are don't have a value, right? But
sure.
You know, we need to diversity is important, but diversity goes beyond demographics.
Art
is a big part of diversity. Culture is a big part of diversity. And we want to make sure that we're not, you know, stripping away elements of that just to fit one message.
I mean, at its raw sense, you know, you take a painting, and all art, for example, is a expression of communication, right? Like, there's something being communicated in that art. It's a sentiment, the way someone felt. They were driven by something. They threw something down on paper. They threw it down on a canvas. And sometimes you can see that, right? In brush strokes and in the intensity of particular colors and things like that. And sometimes that doesn't vibe with everybody, right? The beautiful thing about art is you can walk away from it.
Yep.
Right. Or you don't listen, or you don't have to listen to it.
Sure.
You can hear it. You don't have to listen to it.
Right.
And so, you know, that to me is, I feel like we're losing. I think you're 100% right. I think we're losing a little bit of that savviness of understanding, like, OK, this may not have been made for me, or may not be, like, not all messages are meant to be for you.
Right. Exactly. Mm.
Sooner we accept that, the better off we're going to be, and just move on and focus on whatever it is that jives for you. You know what I mean?
Right.
What you love, and respect what you don't.
I think most people would agree with us. I think most people are more open-minded and more understanding and not trolls, yes, you know, on social media than we think. However, you know, those like us, we don't need to scream the loudest in the room. The people that are on social media that are, you know, doing all these canceling or doing obscene comments, or it used to be called trolls, right? Like people that troll you or troll accounts. These are just people that are the loudest in the room, and the loudest in the room get heard, you know? But it's only on that platform. Right?
Yes, I agree.
I don't think in real life they might behave the same way.
Well, they might in some cases, but yeah, I do think there's something.
Yeah,
I do think there's something to that, though, because having separated myself significantly from social media recently and over the last few months, like, yes, you do realize that there is a world out there, and the world is, for the most part, not reflective of what goes on in a lot of cases in social media. And sure, you are going to get a lot of that. But I do think it is trickling more and more out there in some cases. But it's not new, I guess, at the end of the day. Look, I was saying these same things 20 years ago. I was saying these same things. I can remember when the PMRC was a thing, right? The Parents Music Resource Center, which was Tipper Gore's organization that was trying to censor like heavy metal music, right? And they were the ones who came up with the idea of the parental advisory stickers on records that were responsible for millions of additional records being sold, ironically. All of that stuff was like, you know, I was saying it then too, you know, and a lot of people were. This isn't really any different. I mean, every generation has their thing, right? They have their people who want to ban and cancel things, right? And then there's the people that rebel against it and all of that stuff. So it's not really a new concept for us. It's just the art that they go after, or the thing that they go after, might change, and the way they go about doing it might change. But with social media, it spreads so rapidly and it becomes so part of people's awareness. Like when I was a kid, I mean, I had to tell my parents. I mean, I was at the time, you know, you're talking about, you know, probably in like, you know, 11, 12 years old, 13, maybe, trying to tell my parents what the PMRC was. You know, now, if it were today's days, my parents would call me and be like, hey, did you hear about this thing? Right. So because they see it, you see it on social media, you see it now. It's just the information spreads so easily that it quickly takes off and goes viral. So I think that's a big part of too why you see so much of these things start to explode and take off.
Let's talk about Hamilton,
yeah.
Aaron.
You guys can talk about this
with you on that.
Because I did not see. I feel like I'm the only person in the world that didn't watch Hamilton on Disney Plus. Broadway is just not.
I know
my
it was funny when it dropped. Like there was like a slow trickle, and then like 2-3 days later, it was like boom, 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 Hamilton, Hamilton, Hamilton. So I tried to watch it, and I stopped it like twice.
Okay, did you watch it with your kids, or did you watch it alone?
No, I was watching it alone. I'm not going to watch it. My daughter is going to be like, Daddy, what is happening on here? They're talking too fast. I don't understand. So here's the deal. I am a big fan of Lin-Manuel Miranda. Big, 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 big fan. Saw In the Heights before it was ever on Broadway while he was doing his off-Broadway thing. And I'm a big fan of the work he's done, you know, writing Moana. Like, that's him. You know, he wrote a lot of those songs. Actually, he wrote all those songs. And I love what he's doing for theater. That said, Hamilton is not. I never got a chance to see Hamilton in the theater, and so watching it on a TV is probably not the best way for me to enjoy it. Maybe because it's hella long. Like I couldn't
it's
watch
really
the Irish.
Long.
It's
yeah.
super long. Like I was like an hour of change in, and I paused it, and I'm like, damn, I got an hour and like 20 minutes left to go. I can't watch this right now. Like I had to stop it. And I dig the flow of it. I love the influence of it. It's too long for me. I couldn't watch The Irishman in one sitting. I had to break that movie up, and that was like a 3-hour long thing.
Broke that up too.
And so like that's kind of where I think it's gonna end up for me with Hamilton. It's not because I don't like what it's about. It's gonna take me some time to really sit down and commit myself to it, and I'm gonna have to do multiple viewings of it. It's just not. Just the theater thing on TV just never works for me. Like I stopped Les Mis 30 minutes in when everybody in conversation was like, "Hello, how are you today? I'm doing well. I bought some milk." But like I can't like conversational singing. That just doesn't work for me.
I'm sorry. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
Are you appalled by the singing?
I'm not sure which part of what just happened was worse, because what just happened was, just to put this into perspective for everybody. So I didn't plan on having much to do with this part of the conversation because I have not seen Hamilton. So I kind of just was sitting back for a little bit, and I'm not gonna lie, like I was reading something, and that just happened. And all of a sudden, I hear Aaron singing about, "I'm going for milk today." So I'm not sure which part of that was weirder for me, whatever the hell you just did vocally, or the fact that that's what you interpreted Les Mis, that's what you narrowed Les Mis down to.
I mean, if anyone has seen Les Mis, I'm guessing, Vanana, you've checked it out. The Hugh Jackman, Russell Crowe one, but like that's kind of what it was like.
That was hard to sit through. I think what happened was I got tickets to Les Mis in IMAX.
Oh boy.
And I can't watch movies in IMAX because of like the visuals. Like it gives me a headache and then I throw up. So we didn't know that we got tickets for Les Mis and IMAX. So I was just feeling so sick and the movie was so boring that we refunded our tickets. And I think I later saw that movie, I think on like DVD or something like that. But I couldn't watch it in theaters. It was extremely boring. I think I sat through about an hour of it before we got up and asked for a refund. And I told them I felt sick. I mean, half of it was because the screen is so big that, and I was sitting so close to the front. I literally had to turn my head left and right and left and right and focus on one eyeball at a time. I couldn't get a whole picture, you know? Mm. So you cannot compare Les Mis to Hamilton, though. You're saying that it was really long and it was boring, and that's why you had to turn it off. It is the most exciting thing I've ever seen.
I didn't say it was boring. I just said it was like just – too long.
Okay. I watch it with my boyfriend, and I have to say, like, he's not really a musical fan. Mm. So like after the first like two songs, because like it's like a song and then they have like maybe two words of dialogue and then it goes into another song. Yeah. It's very song heavy. It's not dialogue heavy, it's very song heavy. And he was like, "Is the whole thing gonna be like this? Are they just gonna sing the whole time?" And I was like, "Yeah, it's a musical."
Pretty much. It's not like, hey, you know, with like conversation, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, you know, the star of the show appears and then the song breaks out. It's like, nope, everything that's being said is in. And maybe that's what it is, because I'm having the same issue with it. Like I liked I really like Sweeney Todd. Like I like Johnny Depp's Sweeney Todd movie, the Tim Burton thing they did.
So you're talking about
the
movie.
The movie. Like I like that because it's a musical, but it's also a movie. You know what I mean? Like there's dialogue and then they break out in the song. It's not like the whole thing is, again, "How are you today? I have some milk." Like there's none of that.
No, Hamilton is cooler than that. They're rapping.
No, I know, but Hamilton is that though, because everything is contextualized through a song, and
well, it's a musical though. That's the
point. No. But here's
thank you, Chris. Thank you.
So like, In the Heights is not like that.
Okay.
Rent is not like that.
I've seen Rent 3 times, actually. So yeah. it isn't, but
it's a musical.
There's like, dialogue in Rent, obviously, but the song is really, the songs are telling the story of the scene. It's not the...
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And then...
Go ahead. This is what I thought was so brilliant about Hamilton. And, you know, number one, I cried like 5 minutes in, right? Just because I miss theater so much. And that touched a special place in my heart because in New York, you know, theater has been canceled. Yep. It's not coming back for this year. So just seeing actors on stage and having that muscle memory of being on stage is something that is so special, you know. And I'm in Texas for now, right? But I'm going to go back to New York eventually. And being so far away from home and like, it just brought me viscerally into Broadway, into the stage, into the lights, into what I've spent my whole entire life doing that I can't do, you know? Yeah. So I, like, bawled my eyes out, like, the first 5 minutes. Like, as soon as they opened their mouths, I was like, oh, my God, this is so special to me. But the thing I thought was so brilliant about Hamilton was the way he used language in a rap form with song to tell a story about our founding fathers and this whole entire story that we are familiar with. We all learned it in history, but they made it so cool and how he weaved everything together to tell the story of Hamilton. The whole time I was watching Hamilton, I was wondering in my head, like, why Hamilton? Like, why did Lynn choose Hamilton? What was it about him what was the story that he wanted to tell? You know, I still don't have the answer. I want to do more research, but that was what was so special to me about Hamilton was the way he wrote those words and they all rhymed. That was even more impressive. He got words to rhyme to like tell this story. And then I spent the whole weekend playing Kingdom Hearts. Literally like 10 hours a day. I'm very embarrassed to say, but I got through many rounds and I played the soundtrack the whole time. The songs are so incredible and I'm so sad you didn't like it.
I mean, look, what he does from a spoken word perspective is like no one's ever done before. It's like he took all of these rappers and their styles and like mixed it all into a pod and this is what you get. It is brilliant. Like, you know, that's what I said before we got on to record. I said, I'm going to sound like a hypocrite because I'm going to say I don't like it, but I appreciate it because I do see the art in what he's doing, you know what I mean? Like, and there are some, and the thing is, like, I'm a big hip hop head, so I can hear each song's influence and where it's coming from, like who he's representing in a particular song, right? At least for the hour and so minutes I watched.
Yeah.
I didn't get close to finishing it. And he's always been good at that. I mean, I think that's the beauty of In the Heights, and that is the beauty of You're Welcome, the Maui song in Moana. Mm-hmm. By the way, because it uses the same kind of like flow, spinning kind of thing, real quick, which everyone loves.
Everyone loves it, yeah. But yeah, you know I think because it's so long, you have to be in a certain mood, and you have to be ready for it.
I gotta be drunk. I gotta be like, maybe, I gotta sit down for like three. Like that never happens. And if I do, well, I just got a new couch. I'm gonna be passed out.
I was just gonna say, you know, maybe give it another shot when like you got all the right like environment and like circumstances. Right? Watch it with your dog. Yeah.
I actually don't think it's hypocritical though to say that, you didn't necessarily like something, but you can respect it. Because, I mean, I do that with music all the time, you know, not so much music goals, but with music, like there are genres of music or just certain artists or whatever in particular that I just don't like. But I can respect the quality about it, right? So if there's good musicianship or if somebody's got a great voice or whatever, doesn't mean I have to like the song. I can still respect the talent, sure. I guess, involved. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, there's plenty of stuff that I actually say, yeah, I didn't really like that, but I can respect the attempt. There's things that I don't like or respect, you know, but it, right. So it goes both ways. but yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. That's, I think,
cool.
Something that people do. Yeah. Now, we still need to talk about this whole... So you should never go to the opera, though.
See,
because if you hate everything, being
sung... You know what I think? You know what I have never been to the opera, and I am fascinated, and there are occasions... I mean, because we live in New York, right? So we've got access to all that stuff. But I would like to give that a shot because of the theatricality behind all of it, and it's not, I'm not saying that Hamilton doesn't have that. It certainly does. What I'm probably saying is, if I were in a theater watching Hamilton, I would probably have loved every minute of it. Like sitting in the theater, I just, like I said, maybe it's the TV thing.
It could
maybe it's
be
watching
that's
the theater.
That's what I'm saying. It's your environment.
Because to
I
me,
I don't have kids.
I wasn't even watching with my daughter. My daughter was in daycare, and it was pretty early in the morning.
Okay,
so there was none of that. I mean, I think part of it too is when I watch theater, my eyes go everywhere, right?
Yes.
Like I watch the dancers in the background. I watch, you know, parts of the stage, and I marvel at, because I've seen many, many Broadway shows. So I look at all of the little details and how it's all coming together and all of that stuff. And I can't do that because there are cuts, right? So there are different camera angles, mm-hmm. and it's not staying focused on the whole stage. It's like, oh, we're going to pull a close up on this guy's face. Oh no, we're going to move over there real quick. And so it's taking me out of it.
Could be that.
I think maybe it's just the way that I've been conditioned to watch theater.
Mm-hmm. I also think there's something about the live environment, right? So, you know, being at, and even though this was, from what I understand, right, it was basically just a straight recording of the live performance, right?
Yeah.
So it's not a movie. They recorded the live show despite the cuts and everything. But, you know, it's listening to a great live album is never going to be as powerful, no matter how great the songs may be or how great the recording might be. It's never going to be as powerful as being there live, right? Being in a live concert and feeling feeling that just that energy and the rawness of it and the in the moment aspect of, you know, and that's one of the things that makes like live theater so exciting is the fact that it's live, right? And they're out there without a net, right? And they're, you know, and they're, it, when they nail it, it's like you just, not that you lose respect because again, it is a live performance that's just happened to be recorded, but like just that you get that awe of like, wow, this is all happening like right now, you know, like, so I do think you lose a little bit of that. Sure.
You feel it in your bones because like you're physically there, you're physically surrounded by people's energy that affects us, you know? And anything live affects us. It's so exciting. It's happening right before your very eyes. I think the closest thing we have now is live performances. You know, I mean, live recordings of live theater performances, and some of other theater companies have been streaming that as well. But I haven't watched any of that except for Hamilton. Couldn't afford tickets to it. Never got the lottery, you know. So I think that was a really exciting gift that they gave us. And Aaron, I think you should give it another shot.
Yeah. I also think you should, going forward, since you've been changing up the intros that you do lately, can you just, going forward, I want you to to do every one of the intros in the Aaron musical voice. The Les Mis. I want you to do the Les Mis intro every week if possible.
Hello, welcome to episode 104 yeah. and, of the Fanboy Garage.
And if possible, can you slip in there that you want to go buy milk? I think the buying of the milk thing is really the key, because I don't know that I've ever been at a show where they were like, I would like to buy some milk. Like, that doesn't, I've never heard that. And that would probably not be a show that I would go to. And but I would love to hear you do that. I want you to do that every week.
Will do.
Yeah.
I hope all of our listeners are ready for it.
Oh, God.
Okay. So what else? Do anything else?
I mean, there was some quick peppered news. There were rumors that Star Wars Lucasfilm would releasing a solo series about a fan favorite, the Bad Batch, who kind of premiered in the last season of the Clone Wars, and confirmed as of yesterday, Monday.
Yeah,
it's true. The Bad Batch is getting its own show.
Dave Filoni, of course, running the ship. Yep. So, once again, Disney really using their synergy, their resources well. I mean, keeping Disney Plus strong. Awesome. Again, another one of those things where I'm not going to complain about, especially animated Star Wars. You know, like, it's perfect. Let's keep them coming.
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, it's funny because I saw some people, and it's our, you know, a guy I follow, and we do have some funny conversations around just pop culture, but Zaki Hassan mentioning something along the lines of, like, with the time gap between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens, he's surprised that Lucasfilm isn't focused on giving us any content, you know, from Luke, Leia, and Han's perspective, you know, within that time period. And makes sense.
Sure.
I think it's a very deliberate thing.
Yep.
Because the comic books kind of live, some of the comic books live in that realm. A lot of the novels live in that realm, in terms of filling in the gap. But I think I would enjoy to see a show, animated or not, focused on, you know, those gaps in time. So
yeah,
hopefully one day we'll get it.
I can't imagine we won't at this point, right? I mean, why not?
Yeah. There's always a horse to beat.
Sure. And just in a final note, in a one of those, like, I guess better late than never category, I finally decided to sit down and watch Mayans MC.
Oh, dude.
Yeah. So yeah. I am actually 8 episodes in to season 1 right now. So there's 10 episodes in both first two seasons. So I'm eight episodes through the 20 episodes that have aired at this point. And it's funny because it was a show that I loved Sons of Anarchy. Right. And I didn't watch Mayans. Now, I didn't watch Sons of Anarchy. It's ironic. I didn't start watching Sons of Anarchy until after the second season of that show. So I guess it's kind of fitting that I started watching Mayans after the second season. But I was resisting because I was like, no, you know, I invested so much time in Sons that I think I need a break. And I was worried that it was just going to be like Sons of Anarchy with a different, like, gang.
MC.
Yeah, yeah, a different MC. And there certainly was a little bit of that, but it very quickly becomes its own thing. And I actually am enjoying elements of it even more than Sons of Anarchy. Especially at this point. I mean, it's hard to compare 8 episodes to, like, an entire series, because it's hard to not to put myself back into the mindset of the person watching Sons, like, without knowing how it all ended and stuff. But I like the writing. I think the writing is actually better. The writing on Sons was never its strongest suit, as much as I loved that show. But I like the writing, I think, a little bit better. I like the scope of the show. I think the scope of the show is bigger, which surprised me, to be honest with you. It's a much bigger world. Like on Sons, like some Charming always, even though feds were involved and stuff, like Charming always seemed like it existed in this isolated, like, bubble.
Yeah.
And like nothing else was really mattered, like went on. This world here in Mayans MC is bigger. the existence of the rebels and the cartel, like, I think make this a much bigger story and much more, in some cases, more relevant to the times.
Yeah, I was going to say it is super relevant. They do tackle some of the, you know, larger social issues that that are in the media.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, too, it doesn't rely so much on, like, the tropes. Like
At least not yet.
The mother son dynamic thing and the evil stepdad, like, all of that shit goes right out the window. None of that stuff exists.
Well, I mean,
they kind of keep it really tight because it's about the two brothers and the father.
Yes.
But they, you know, I think what they did later on in Sons of Anarchy was they started to open it up to some of the other members of the group, right? And everyone had their kind of spotlight.
Sure.
You get a little bit more of that sooner.
Yes.
But, you know, yeah, I think it's Kurt Sutter certainly learned a lot himself.
Kurt Sutter now no longer affiliated with the show.
Yeah, we talked about that a couple, like, so, way back.
Yeah, so season 3 will be Kurt Sutter free. So Elgin James, someone I've been very familiar with for a while, for a lot of reasons, he, who is the co-creator of the show, he is taking over now as full-time showrunner. So I think they'll be fine. I actually think some of his fingerprints are the reason why I'm liking the show as much. I think his writing has probably been one of the strongest elements of the show. So I'm not overly concerned about that. I think sometimes Kurt Sutter could be his own worst enemy.
You know, the interesting thing was about Kurt Sutter. So we did, I think this is, like I said, way back, but we did report his departure.
Yes.
Yeah. It came at or around the time shortly after, you know, Disney had absorbed 20th Century Fox.
Yeah.
So, but one of the things that stood out to me about Kurt Sutter's comments, beyond the fact that he was very annoyed because he was essentially fired, was that he always anticipated stepping out of the show.
Yes.
And very self-aware about his role as a white person writing about Mexican culture and some of the issues that the characters, you know, he and Elgin created would be facing, and he felt it was a little disingenuous. I'm paraphrasing here, but he didn't see a place for himself in continuing to write these characters because he just can't really identify with them,
right?
In a way,
that's
so
why I
thought that was always a brave statement.
Yeah, and that's why I believe that the show's okay, because I do think a lot. This was more about Elgin James. I mean, Kurt Sutter obviously created the universe, right, that this show is from. So I think that based on his own comments, I don't know how. I think this was more of Elgin James' show, but Kurt Sutter was there as the guiding light, and since it was his universe, and I actually so far got to say I love, and one of the surprising elements of it is how well they're integrating the Sons of Anarchy universe, because it's like they're not overdoing it. You're getting it in, like, a little bit here and there, but the what you are getting fits within the story that they're trying to tell, right? It's not, like, just gratuitous stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's what I like so far. But, yeah, I mean, I he did say that he had already started to back away, and he said that was one of the reasons why he thinks that some of the complaints happened, the alleged complaints. Because that he had stepped away and whatever. But yeah, so I think it was probably going to happen anyway, especially since he had, you know, just spent so many years working on Sons, and now he's another, like, motorcycle gang show. He probably was going to eventually hand it over. But anyway, so I started watching it. I'm loving it. I can't wait to finish the first season, and I'll probably get a big chunk of season 2 done by the next show. I'll probably have finished the first 2 seasons. That's my guess.
Now let me ask, do you have to watch Sons of Anarchy to understand this show?
I would say, again, I'm only 8 episodes in, so I can't speak to, from my perspective, I would say
I'm gonna say yes.
Okay. Okay.
Cool, I don't know
I've never
what
watched Sons.
Yeah, so. I don't know. I think so far, at least like I said, through the 8 episodes for me, and maybe it's easy for me to say because I did watch it. So maybe part of it is there. But I think if you have an awareness of, I think you can watch it without knowing Sons, but I think it has more of an, certain things will have more of an impact if you did.
When you get to season 2.
Yeah.
You'll understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Season 1 is setting the stage, right? Where you're introduced to these new characters, you kind of have to fall back in love with the universe of motorcycle gangs if you're familiar with Sons of Anarchy. If you're not, you're gonna hit it off with the characters right away. But there are moments and there's layers of context that you're not gonna get unless you watch Sons of Anarchy.
Mm. Okay. All right, I'll put that on my list.
But there's Sons so of much. Anarchy is a great. It's a. I mean, I love Sons of Anarchy, and I've actually watched it all twice, which totally resulted in a soul cleansing moment because it is quite a dark show. It's good.
Yeah,
I would say it's a good show to watch.
I would say so far. From my experiences, I think I think you can watch it without having watched Sons as long as you're prepared to maybe do a little research. Like you might have to Google or Wikipedia certain things, certain
yeah, but
characters.
Then for that, just watch the show.
Just to,
yeah, no,
well,
yeah.
I mean, yeah,
I
but I mean, unless
you
want
to,
unless you want to sit through some 7 or 8 seasons, you don't feel like doing that, but.
But
nine,
there are some moments in that series where they do some really, really awesome shit where they treat the viewer like you're actually in the universe, right? So they withhold information from you. They don't just serve it all up on a platter. And that, I think one of the first times when I was genuinely surprised in a TV show because we had been kept out of the loop – I had such an amazing reaction to that watching the show that I was like, you have just won like an infinite round of points in my book.
Yeah. Just skip,
you know,
skip the, like the majority of season 3 where they're in Ireland. Other than watch, because the end of that season was one of my favorite endings ever, the rest of that season was kind of rough, but, you know, it couldn't hurt. It's going to take you a little while, though, because they're like 13-episode seasons, and one was 14 episodes. So it's a bigger show than Mayans was. But if, you know,
I'm okay with that. I need a new show to watch. I just finished, we just finished Homecoming on Amazon. I binged Hannah in like 2 days. Nothing else on our plate right now, so... You know, and I'm going to be, since I'm in, I went from one hotspot to the other. So since I'm going to be inside for, you know, another X amount of months, that sounds like a very good plan. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I mean, I think you'll probably be inside until, probably until New Mutants comes out in 2025. So I would say, yeah, it gives you plenty of time to watch Sons of Anarchy and Mayans. So, yeah, I think that's fair.
Yes.
So get on that.
Yes.
I say watch Sons of Anarchy. Actually, have you ever seen The Shield?
I did the first season.
And you didn't? That didn't inspire you to want to keep going?
Because
I didn't. I literally went after that first season. I stayed up an entire weekend to watch the next season. Like that's how gripping I found that first season. Like I didn't sleep for an entire weekend watching the first two seasons straight through. Before binge watching was a thing. I mean, this was on DVD like 10 years ago. Yeah.
I don't know what happened.
Okay. So what you're going to do is then you got to do this in order. So you got to watch The Shield. Then you watch Sons of Anarchy. Then you can watch Mayans. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Start with
The
Shield. Yeah, if you can find it. I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming that streams somewhere, but
yeah, don't worry. You'll be able to finish all of that before I finish Hamilton.
Well, I hope I give birth to a baby after that. That should be my prize.
Sure.
Okay. A little banana. Don't you guys want to see a little banana?
Sure. Absolutely.
Oh, my boyfriend's going to hate me. He's going to listen to this episode.
He's going to be like, what are you putting pressure on me?
Don't worry. To be fair, he's already turned it off by the time Aaron sings about going to get milk. So I think you're okay.
Oh, okay. Very good.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very good. Yeah. Very good. I love it.
Thank you.
All right. So let's get out of here. Of course, you can go to thefanboygarage.com. And check out the current episode and the episode archive and the merch store. All that exciting merch. I just got a delivery today. I got my Keaton Returns t-shirt, which looks amazing.
Looks great.
Unbelievable. And the new logo t-shirt, which also looks amazing. Can't wait to wear those out next week sometime.
Wear those out. To nowhere.
Yeah. Wear those out to New Mutants premiere. Can't wait for that. So check out all of that. Of course, the face masks are there as well, since that doesn't seem to be ending anytime soon either. Get yourself a face mask in every design if possible. And, of course, the social medias to join the conversation, the Twitter, the Facebook, the Instagram, at the Fanboy Garage. And, of course, you can, you're really not going to find me much on Twitter, at RealCAlmighty.
Well, find me at banana_TFG. I have been tweeting more, and I hope you guys are excited about that, because I think I'm moving on to Twitter as a whole. And I started a poetry Instagram page, and I kind of think that's what I want to use Instagram for. But I'll share that with you guys when it's like, you know, when it becomes a thing. But banana_TFG, find me there, and I'll be happy to chat with anyone.
Cool. And you can find me at AARonSpeaks. That is A_A_RonSpeaks. Thank you to everyone that's been purchasing merch. We do track that. So thank you guys for supporting us and the show. And once again, thank you so much for listening to episode 104. We will catch you guys next week. Stay safe and later.
Yeah, and also just before we go, shout out to Ron Diesel, who had a birthday recently.
Oh yeah, Ron Diesel, happy birthday!
Happy birthday, Ron!
Yeah,
woo! The cake is coming with the person in it.
Nope. Canceled.
They'll be wearing a mask.
Yeah. All right.
Happy birthday, Ron.
You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.